This is Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. 3D has come a long way since the movies in the 50s. Old 3D movies like Dial M for Murder. You mean you didn't know that was a 3D movie? I saw it. It was great. Creature from the Black Lagoon. I'm sure you saw that one. They used 3D to make the audience feel like objects were shooting out at them, right? You always had to duck when something was coming out of the screen. Well, now movies like Up and Avatar give 3D a whole new dimension, and they win Academy Awards. So everybody in the industry now wants to jump on the bandwagon and make 3D stuff. But nobody really knows where the bandwagon is going. Filmmakers are thinking in terms of theaters. TV set makers want you to stay home and watch 3D at home. The first 3D TVs will be hitting the market soon. Could they really change how we watch television? This hour, 3D experts are here to guide us through the entertainment revolution. What do you think about 3D? Where would you like to see it? Our number 1-800-989-8255. Maybe you have some questions about how 3D works. You can tweet us. Tweet your questions by writing the at sign followed by SCIFRI. That's at SciFry. And if you want more information, you can go to our website at sciencefriday.com. Well, we have photos and information up there. Go over there now. You'll see some stuff about 3D. Let me introduce my guests. Tony Myers is the director of the movie Hubble 3D that's coming out today in theaters. She's here in the studio. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. Great to be here.
You're welcome. And if you want to see some images from the new movie Hubble 3D, as I say, you can go to our website at sciencefriday.com/arts, where our SciArts stuff is housed. Priya Ganapati is a staff writer for Wired Magazine in San Francisco, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, let me ask you first, what are some of the technologies that people are using to get 3D on their TV sets, Priya?
Before I get into that, I want to explain exactly what how 3D works.
Oh, good.
So fundamentally, our eyes are about 3 inches apart. So each eye sees the same image, but from a slightly different perspective. What our brain does is takes these two set of images, fuses them into one, helps focus it, and it computes very quickly the distance or the depth. Along with that image. Now, what 3D TVs are trying to do is fundamentally trick the brain into watching an image and perceiving it as 3D. So it's all about showing the eyes two different sets of images and then letting our brain do the work, putting it together and giving the whole perception of depth of 3D, as they call it.
And usually we have to wear those glasses to separate the two images and let our eyes see them.
Exactly.
Right?
The easiest way and the most common way to do it is you have to have a pair of glasses that will basically, you know, sort of show one set of image to each eye,
right. So
they're both the same frame. So what fundamentally happens is those glasses trick your brain into thinking that you're watching something in 3D. And there is a technology that can let you do that without glasses, but it is right now very experimental at its early stages when we are not completely there yet.
Mm-hmm. So when we see these new TV sets that are coming out, you're still going to have to wear the glasses.
There is no getting away from that. Yes, you still have to wear your glasses. You have some choice in the kind of glasses that you get, and
right. You
have some both in terms of price points and how these glasses look and how they work, but yes, you do have to wear those glasses.
Tony Myers, your movie Hubble 3D is coming out today. What's the difference, what's different about the 3D technology in this movie versus how other movies are made?
Well, first of all, it's IMAX 3D, which is projected onto a very large screen, very, very bright and sharp. It's shot, as is most 3D, traditionally with two pieces of film, one for the left eye, one for the right. But in this case, because we shot the film in space, most of it, that technology is a special design that exposes the left eye and the right eye on a single strip of film. It moves horizontally through the camera at a great rate of speed. And then
right. When
we get the footage back from space, we separate it all back frame by frame into left and right eyes because that's how you have to project it.
And so you're still using that ancient technology of film instead of digital, right?
We are still using that ancient technology, which is quite wonderful.
It is, isn't it?
Very, very high resolution. There is nothing yet digitally that really comes close to to that super high resolution, but it will soon.
And seeing it in the IMAX format in 3D, it's overwhelming. I've seen IMAX. It's just wonderfully overwhelming.
It is.
Surrounding you, right?
It's pretty immersive because not only are you going inside and outside of the screen, but it's out beyond your peripheral vision in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Priya, how are home TV people going to compete with this?
Home TVs are not obviously on the same quality. 3D stuff on home TVs is obviously not on the same quality, both in terms of brightness and the experience that they offer. But the very fact that you're sitting on your couch, you're sitting at home and watching something in 3D is a huge advantage. So that's what TV makers are counting on, that you can be at home and still have the experience, but it's fundamentally the same difference between watching a movie on your high-definition TV today at home versus watching it in the theater.
Of course, the popcorn is a lot cheaper at home.
It is. And the candy.
That I have to agree.
And you can decide how much candy you want to have.
Exactly. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about the future of 3D technology. If you'd like to give us a call, also you can send us a tweet at SciFri, at SCIFRI. You know, one of the things that we're not seeing that are coming out, and I've talked to 3D gamers, people, is that 3D games, they tell me that you can get too nauseous playing a 3D game, Tony. Have you found that to be true?
I'm not a gamer, so I couldn't tell you.
I have tried 3D games, and yes, it's a lot of motion fundamentally, and there's a lot going on the screen, unlike a movie, a 3D movie, or some other 3D piece of content, where you know you're not overloaded, and your brain is not bombarded with images and information. So, 3D games can be a bit challenging if you're trying it out for the first time. But the advantage is there is 3D, the whole 3D aspect to it. It can be a lot of fun, and given the right game, it's a huge step up from just from traditional 2D games.
Tony, can you, or I should phrase it this way, are you thinking of making films for the smaller screen than just the giant IMAX 3D movies?
My experience is all with the IMAX canvas, and yes, it'd be interesting to try it, but so far I'd like to continue working with the area that I know. But television, I guess, would have a different set of challenges.
And how do you train astronauts to become professional photographers with 3D IMAX?
That's really easy because astronauts are really smart, and they wouldn't be astronauts if they weren't the best learners in the world. And so James Nyhaus, our director of photography and crew trainer, and I go down there and spend about 28 to 30 hours with the crew spread over 8 months in advance of the flight. And we, during that time, train ourselves about the mission in terms of what's going on. We develop a shopping list of scenes with them and show them how to operate the camera. And it's always a joy to do that.
1-800-989-8255. Lots of people want to ask questions. So let's go to Ian in Akron. Hi, Ian.
Hey there. How are you?
Hey there.
Great show today, by the way.
Thank you.
Wanted to inquire about how exactly is the rollout being planned for the 3D, you know, TV movement that's going to happen in terms of, like, you know, CNN or ESPN or, you know, the cooking station or, you know, whatever the viewer wants to watch. How will that actually come to pass in terms of if I buy the TV, when will I be able to actually access the things that I'm used to in 3D?
Or are there going to be separate 3D channels? Like there are high-definition channels now.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, do we know anything about how that actually is planned to roll out? Because I've just heard of these TVs recently, and I didn't know if, you know, even with when it comes to gaming, like you just said, like, are there going to be separate fees for such use? And, like,
let me ask Priya. Priya Ganapati of Wired, can you give us some hint on that?
We are going to see a lot of 3D channels come out this year. For instance, let's start with Europe first. In Europe, you're going to see Sky TV launch its first 3D channel on April 3rd. So that's just early next month. And this Sky TV 3D channel will be available to Sky TV subscribers at no extra cost. So they're making a big move there. In the U.S., we're going to see Discovery and ESPN both launch 3D channels by the end of the year. ESPN has said that starting June 11th with the 2010 FIFA World Cup, it's going to start offering sports events in 3D on its 3D channels. Discovery hasn't said exactly when it's going to kick off 3D programming, but it promises it will be before the end of the year. DirecTV is going to have 3D channels in the U.S., and we're going to see another major event early, later next week with Madison Square Garden live broadcasting a 3D game, a hockey game in 3D for the first time.
I heard there's a golf game that was going to be also broadcast.
Right.
Yeah. Why can't we just retrofit our old high-definition TV with some box that might turn it into 3D?
I think the way is because of this, your TV has to blast out images, an alternating set of images for your eyes, and that's what's called a refresh rate, so the rate at which the TV sends out those frames. And traditional LCD or plasma TVs that we have right now do not have a high enough refresh rate to let you watch 3D. There are also some other internal modifications that have to be made. For instance, you have to have some kind of infrared technology inside the TV that will communicate with your glasses so that the images on the TV are in sync with your glasses. You need to have a connector. So there's a whole bunch of equipment that goes inside the TV to make sure that it works with 3D.
And I guess we won't know how well it will be accepted until it actually comes out. So we have a rollout date for the first one?
Panasonic has said that it's going to have its first 3D TV bundle available by the end of the month. They did put out a few units, which were all sold out, but they're going to be available at Best Buy at the end of the month. And this is going to be 50-inch TVs, which include a 3D Blu-ray player and a set of glasses.
All right, we're going to take a break and come back and talk more with Tony Myers and Priya Ganapati. Also, we're going to be joined by Lenny Lipton, who's President and Chief Science Officer at Oculus 3D. He'll tell us more about the movie industry. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Our number 1-800-989-8255. You can also see a 3D movie or a little bit of a 3D about the 3D movies on ScienceFriday.com and watch a little bit of Hubble 3D. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking about the future of 3D with my guest, Tony Myers, director of the movie, the new IMAX movie, Hubble 3D, coming out today in theaters. She's here with me in our studios. Priya Ganapati is a staff writer for Wired Magazine in San Francisco. And joining us now is Lenny Lipton, President and Chief Science Officer of Oculus 3D. Welcome to Science Friday, Lenny.
Hi, Ira. How you doing?
Hi there. Do we have to create new technologies to make all these new 3D movies? Do we have to create new cameras and things like that?
It would be good to have what I call an integral camera that was designed from the ground up as a 3D camera, because right now we have cameras that are assembled out of existing 2D cameras. And I think in terms of ease of use and instrumentation and even the final result, the industry requires, not only the movie industry, but the television industry requires a camera that was designed to be a 3D camera rather than two cameras put together.
Mm-hmm. Tony Myers, you agree?
Yes, I think you definitely need a purpose-built instrument to do it, especially as the what I hear all the time is strapping two 2D cameras together, and that frequently results in an interocular distance that's far too great and doesn't give ideal 3D.
So you have to fool around with it later
on? Yes, you have to move it closer and find a way to mess with the lens mounts and everything.
Does the difference have to be exactly the difference between your two eyeballs, Lenny?
No. That would be a mistake. What you really want to wind up with is a comfortable, beautiful image, and you don't have to have the distance between the camera lenses the same as the distance between the eyes. In fact, only occasionally will that be the case.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Will we appreciate 3D on these tiny little smartphones we have? I mean, can you actually see 3D on something like that?
When I was in Japan 4 or 5 years ago, these little phones had stereoscopic images on them, and they had a lot of charm. They were charming. The image wasn't especially deep, but it was fun.
Charming and fun. I guess that's a good one. Useful? Who knows? I mean, can you actually? I've always wondered this. Now, why would you want to watch a movie on a tiny little screen that was big in 1946? That was. We should be getting into bigger technologies now. But do you see any problems, Lenny, with the new crop of TVs that are coming out now? The 3D camera, 3D television.
Well, it's fascinating because my colleagues and I at Stereographics in the 1980s. Invented all the key technology that's now going into the 3D televisions. We offered products for industry and science, but we made the first flicker-free field sequential televisions, which were really monitors for computer graphics. We made the first shuttering eyewear, crystallized, which sold over 100,000 pairs, but for people in aerial mapping and molecular modeling. And the present shuttering glasses are a continuation of the tradition of crystallized, which was invented, 25 years ago. And even the multiplexing technique that is now used, the most popular one, the side-by-side technique, we invented and patented. So it's wonderful to see everything happening now, obviously being driven by the movies.
Yeah.
The success of 3D movies have created a craving for a home viewing. So I think that's something I've been waiting for.
Let's go to Ted in Cincinnati. Hi, Ted. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much. I think my question probably concerns more the movie technologies than the digital television technologies, but like many men, I am red-green colorblind, and I find that the red lens, blue lens glasses don't do anything for me when I'm watching 3D projections or 3D images because I'm just not picking up any depth at all. They just look a little fuzzy.
Toni Myers is shaking her head on that one.
Well, yeah.
in our theaters use a polarizing technique, so you don't have the red blue glasses happily, so you'll be able to separate those images.
Ted, when was the last time you saw a 3D movie?
It's probably been a few years now. I didn't see any point in going back because they were so unfulfilling for all the hype.
Well, they don't use those crummy little paper glasses anymore.
So. Well, as recently as last year's, 2 years ago, Super Bowl, they were doing a commercial with those, and I think it was Pepsi maybe or Doritos or somebody, and they distributed them widely, but
don't believe everything you see on television. all the new ones are, as Tony was saying, they all use these polarizing lenses that have no color in them, so you won't get that. You won't be suffering anymore. Good luck to you.
Thank you much.
Right. Well, you were mentioning, Lenny, that you would love to have a new technology as a camera dedicated to just making 3D film. What other new technologies do you see on the horizon, or would you love to have if you had a blank check to make it?
Well, the major change would be to eliminate the eyewear, but I think that's a Herculean effort that's going to take a very long time. But everything we have is in place now for eyewear-based systems for television and for the theater. So I think we're looking at a period of development without really requiring inventing the wheel. So there's got to be a lot of good engineering.
Yeah, Priya, you agree that's the biggest challenge?
Right. And right now we do have some prototype systems in their sort of early stages that are TVs, 3D TVs that don't require any eyewear, but they have a lot of limitations for starting with. You have to sit in front of the TV at a particular angle to make sure you can watch those images right. And it has a limited viewing distance, so you have to be within 4 feet to sort of, see the images. So we have a long way to go before we can get rid of those limitations and make it a comfortable viewing experience. So you can watch the TV from any angle, you can be anywhere in the room, and all that is not possible right now with TVs that don't use glasses.
Tony, did you want to jump in?
I just had a question was for the glassless technique. Is it some kind of coating that goes on the front of the television? And what is that? I'm curious about it.
Yeah, the major issue here has to do with the selection technique, which, as you say, you call it a coating. But typically, these are refractive optics with a multiplicity of very small lenses that are able to take the multiple perspectives that the set is displaying and fan them out into space. Mm-hmm. So you've got an issue with regard to how to design that properly, but also because a stereoscopic television, to fulfill the same kind of requirements of ease of viewing that present television has, requires probably 100 or more images. You've got a very big pixel requirement. You've got to have a lot of information, which probably at today can't possibly be broadcast, but has to be reconstructed in the television set. So, you know, 4K TVs are maybe on the horizon, but we might need a 400K TV to do auto stereoscopic TV, that is to say, TV without eyewear. So it's a big resolution issue. You need a lot of information.
So you need a big, what'd you say, a big bandwidth. We need a big pipe for the Internet for that stuff.
No, you may not need a big pipe. You may be able to reconstruct the image at the television set. That was the thrust of Philips' effort for many years. Philips was working on such a device, and they withdrew from the market and from their development efforts a year ago, which I think was a setback. They, I think, came to the determination that it was just going to take too much time and money.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony, how were you able to convert 2D Hubble images into 3D images?
We do that in Toronto at IMAX in-house, and the typical conversion process involves making a duplicate eye and offsetting it by the correct distance, mm-hmm. and then the computer artists come in and fill in the occlusion areas where there's missing information. Just like you would in Photoshop, it's a
one
hand,
frame at a time.
It's a hand.
Oh my goodness!
It's rotoscoping and occlusion work. It's very, very detailed and labor intensive, but they do a great job.
It's quite remarkable because it has been used for two major features: G-Force, which is a Bruckheimer Disney movie, and Alice, another Disney movie. And in both cases, they did a pretty darn good job.
They certainly did. I saw Alice yesterday.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of Caroline, which was a stop-action movie where they had to do
Coraline, every... Now, Coraline was actually shot... Henry Selick and I have been friends for years. He called up one day and asked how I figured he ought to shoot that. And I proposed to him he take a single digital camera and jog it over by a few millimeters to produce the left and right images, and that's how Henry shot Coraline. But it wasn't reconstructed. It was actually shot stereoscopically.
Yeah. No, I meant how labor-intensive it is to shoot one frame at a time like that,
because
not a cartoon.
At least 30 sound stages going at the same time to get throughput.
Wow. So that's the way that you would do it, the way you would recommend that's how you do it with stop action like that? You take one camera, move it left and right, back and forth? One exposure?
Yeah, that's the way Henry did it, based on my explanation to him, and he and the cinematographer Pete Kozacek worked out the details. And if you think about it, it's a pretty good technique because you can't possibly get a twin lens stereo camera in there. So by taking the puppets in the background aren't going to move.
Right.
You can take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Priya, what do you see besides the camera lensless, eyeglassless challenge as another challenge to making 3D acceptable all over the place?
I think right now, just working with the systems that we have, 3D is can be a fun experience, but it's also very draining. There's the problem of some people don't do very well with 3D TVs. There's the issue of eye strain. They get headaches. You know, you sometimes just feel get nauseatic through the whole process. So it's not so even with existing systems, there's that whole challenge of adjusting to 3D and plus cost. Is a huge factor. 3D TVs, as we know today, are expensive, and we have to see if consumers are willing to pay that much money to get on this new technology.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue you raise is very interesting. You have to be very careful shooting for a small screen, but I think 3D movies are going to translate very well onto stereoscopic televisions and will probably be very comfortable to view. When you're looking at 3D images pretty close, say living room distances, there are some real concerns you don't have with a theater screen.
Right.
But I think it can be worked out. Also, with regard to the price or the cost issue, I think we're going to see stereoscopic televisions become de rigueur. They're just going to become the normal, and they'll be so-called stereo ready. And I don't think they're going to cost very much more than a normal flat panel TV in the long run, because they're going to lay off all of the delta. The extra cost is going to be in the aftermarket. The shuttering eyewear are going to bear the expense of the difference between 2D and 3D.
Well, would it be possible for me, now I wear glasses, could I not now or sometime soon go get my prescription glasses, but have them built already with 3D built into them? And then I'm wearing them all the time. They sort of look, they're polarized, so they sort of leave the sun out, and I'm happy about that. But now when I sit down in front of my 3D TV set, I don't have to put another pair of glasses on.
I'm not sure that's that likely a possibility for shuttering eyewear, which are electronic devices with electro-optical shutters in them.
But what if they're just plain the polarizing kind that I'm watching in the theater now?
Well, the here's the trick. For a stereoscopic television to be a successful consumer item, the delta between that and a 2D set has to be pretty darn small, or people aren't going to go for it, especially now when there's very little content, or maybe almost no content. So the technique that the major, or the technology that the major electronics suppliers and set manufacturers have adopted is one in which the cost of making a high field rate television that runs at a, you know, you have a lot of pictures per second, 120 instead of 60, is not that great. And if you lay the cost off into the eyewear, in other words, if the aftermarket purchase is where the cost resides rather than in the set itself, you may be able to sell a lot of sets that are ready for stereoscopic broadcasting. And then when there's good content, people go out and buy the eyewear, and then they're ready to see stereoscopic images. Mm. But the technique you're describing, where you have passive polarizing eyewear, is one that intrinsically costs more because it requires a special layer that is applied to the monitor screen, and that is, at this point, quite costly. Mm-hmm. If the cost of that could come down, your suggestion would be a good one because it does produce a good-looking image, but it's still rather costly.
Yeah, we're talking about the future of 3D this hour on Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Tony Myers, Priya Ganapati, and Lenny Lipton. Just a few minutes left to go. Any predictions, Priya?
I think we're going to definitely see a lot of interest in 3D TVs. They're just beginning to sort of take off. We're seeing the content come in. We're seeing Hollywood show a lot of interest, which is going to translate into, you know, consumer interest in 3D televisions. Because so I definitely think next year is going to be very interesting for 3D TVs, where we might see price come down and a little bit more of standardization in the kind of technology that's being used. So I think next year will be the year to watch for 3D TVs.
Tony Myers, are all the new IMAX going to be out in 3D? Following, do you think?
Pretty much so. It's definitely taken off, and all of the studio movies that IMAX does are a lot of those are 3D now, and certainly the next films I'm planning to do will be 3D.
Give us a hint what the next one might be.
Well, I'd certainly like to do another space film that concentrates on Earth, but also the International Space Station. I had a wonderful experience on this film flying through the Hubble data, the actual pictures that Hubble has sent back. And having done two sequences like that, I sure would love to do a lot more. The response has been terrific.
Does NASA get any money from the film?
Like NASA's charter, by law, says that they need to disseminate all the information about what the agency is doing to the public and what the taxpayer dollars are paying for, and so we fulfill that mandate.
That means no, I guess. But you're putting good stuff, but the money and not going back.
No, they supply the orbiter and the astronauts, and we supply the film.
And Lenny, any closing thoughts on the future of 3D?
Well, I see stereoscopic movies continuing to drive the home medium. Right now we have a collision of major features in the theaters. There aren't enough theaters that can show 3D movies, and that's what my new company is trying to do, provide more projection systems. And as long as this persists, and I actually think that the stereoscopic medium in theaters will become ubiquitous, I see over the next few years 2D movies going away simply for economic reasons, because people prefer 3D movies.
Will they bring them back as 3D somehow?
2D movies?
Yeah.
Sure, I think. But that would require special movies like Star Wars or maybe Titanic that people would like to go back and see in 3D. And I think they would enjoy them.
All right.
And, of course, that will create more content for televisions at home, but not enough. So you'll need specially purposed home television content.
All right. We've run out of time. I want to thank Tony Myers, director of the IMAX movie Hubble 3D, coming out today in theaters. Priya Ganapati is staff writer for Wired Magazine in San Francisco. Lenny Lipton, president and chief science officer of Oculus 3D and life fellow of the Society of Motion Pictures and Television Engineers in Los Angeles. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome for taking the time to be with us today. Have a great weekend.